Subscribe to the Hit That Line Podcast Network, brought to you by Breeden RV Center. Breeden RV Center, family-owned and operated, a no-pressure, laid-back atmosphere, and always home of the free maintenance for life.
You're listening to the Hog Talk Podcast, part of the Believe and Hit That Line Podcast Network.
With us on the line is the voice of the Arkansas Razorbacks, Chuck Barrett.
A former guest of the show, Coach Mike Neighbors from the Arkansas women's basketball team.
We have from ESPN's Around the Horn, highly questionable. Also a two-time Dan Le Batard Show SUI winner and a former heptathlete at Cornell, Sarah Spain.
And we are happy to be joined by Martrell Spate.
Mr. Phil Elson, the voice of Razorback baseball and the Ladybacks.
Razorback Nation, welcome into episode number 170 of the one and only Hog Talk Podcast, live from the Heinemann Services Studios. I am your host, Kyle Sutherland, alongside Porter Hayes. We thank you, as always, for joining us. If you're a first-time listener, make sure you hit that subscribe button. That way you never miss a show. And if you can, also leave us some star power, preferably five stars, and a written review, so that way we continue to get our name out there and reach more people. We got another loaded show for you. Of course, basketball continues their streak, winning eight of their last nine. We'll talk some baseball. They're on a roll right now. And Porter will talk in segment two with Pigtrail Nation anchor Tara Talmadge. I almost forgot her name there for a second. Tara Talmadge, after we get through a break here in a bit. So, Porter, I don't know about you, but I am still on cloud nine, just about like every Razorback fan is. Here we are recording on a Thursday night. About 24 hours ago, we had were just about to tip off against the number six Alabama Crimson Tide, which end up winning 81-66. A couple of things I'm trying to do off the top of my head here. Yeah. Do what?
Was it 81-66.
I was looking at that. I didn't write that down here, so I was trying to think about it off the top of my head. And it could have been even worse if we would have, or like at least worse from their standpoint, if we would have actually hit our free throws. But then again, you know, there, I know that some Bama fans, like the one that I work with across from, said that we're just like all the ones that you saw on Twitter talking about how the game just wasn't called down the middle, but you know, whatever.
I kind of want to jump in for a second, because we, you know, you go to Twitter and you got the trolls. I mean, they dug up two of the LSU games, same discrepancy. Alabama won one game by like 20. They won over 20 both times, I think. I mean, one was like 105-75 or something, and it was like 22-9 and 22-6. Was the free throws that LSU got to shoot, and Alabama was shooting six or nine free throws. So it's like that every game. But of course, when they win, they're not going to say something. And we got to bring it back into our fans too. If that was rules reversed, Arkansas fans would be saying the same thing. Because it's kind of a catch 22. You know, you want to laugh at Alabama for, hey, let's laugh about the refs when they get all those breaks in football. But we're going to have fun with it, because I know for a fact we'd be saying the same things if that was the rebound, or I mean, not the rebound, but the foul throw, the free throws on the other end.
And I don't think that people just like to actually dig into stuff after games actually happen. You just like to think about, well, okay, so just because there's such a massive discrepancy on each side, like, what was it? I think we shot 43 and they shot a total of eight. And so you like to look at those stats. You look at the stat sheet and you look at what other people say, and you just like to go along with that because you try to find some justification, whether it is the refs were bad or the coaching is bad, the players don't care. Now, sometimes in some cases that can be true. I have always stood by, I know that you've been on the other side of this, I have always stood by that good teams, great or good teams, will never let the refs come down to it. Now, I understand that there are some special cases. Michigan fans will bring up the JT was short. Arkansas fans, which I would say if there's any game that you can really make a good point for this, would be the Auburn game this past year, mainly because you already had the lead and it was a clear Joe Fouché recovery, but that is what it is. We've moved on from that, or at least most of us have. But I just don't think that people like to dig into the fact that Alabama is a three-point shooting team. They didn't drive the paint a lot. Now, look, I believe that they took like 35 shots or something like that in the paint, but just because you take a shot in the paint does not necessarily mean that you're squared up against a guy and you're trying to go up for a layup. It could be various different cases, whether it's a jump shot, something like that. But either way, I love the chippiness of this. It was a great matchup. The best, or the only, whichever way you want to look at it, since 1998, 23 years ago, that they won a top 25 matchup in Bud Walton Arena. And there is no doubt if these two teams see each other again in the SEC tournament, it is going to be one for the ages.
Yeah, and with Alabama, you know, you look at these numbers. They shot 37% from the for field goals. They shot 33% in three-pointers, 11 for 33. They shot 37.5% from the free throw line, 3 for 8. They shot 8 free throws last night. We shot 43. So there is a big discrepancy there. It looks big. But you can't make the same argument when you win than when you lose. Because if this was a Wayne Gaines situation and it was like that, yeah, it looks bad because it was at Arkansas. But when you've got 3 to 4 other games where you got the same data, that becomes a pattern. Therefore, that excuse is no good. It's not valid. So that just shows, you know, you're shooting 33 threes. So you're shooting 10 less threes than we shot free throws. So you're going 30% across the board. You're not going to win the game. And you let the refs get to you. So take the technical fouls. How many technical fouls? There was two, right?
There was two, yes. Or I think there was – I know there was two – no, I'm sorry, yes. There was two on Petty. I was thinking there was two ejections, but there was two on Petty, one right there at the end, which that was a little bit skeptical, but you're not going to get a call with it going behind the basket or behind the board like that. And then, of course, Jalen Tate, which he still maintains his innocence. He put on Twitter to ask Moses and a couple of the other players of whether he actually said anything or not. So he's continuing to maintain his innocence on there. But, there was two.
You take those three away. So there's three total technical. That's 6 free throws. So take that away from the 43 because you can't use that excuse. Well, they called Chippy foul. That was a technical foul. And I even went to Petty's defense. I mean, yeah, I was using a pun, but I understand how he was getting mad. Yes, the refs were bad all the way around, but you got to overcome that. You're the sixth ranked team in the nation. You got to be able to overcome that. But they're just kind of falling apart. They hit their peak, and we'll just see. But yeah, I would not want to see this matchup in the SEC tournament because they're going to be ready for them.
Speaking of the SEC tournament and the postseason, March Madness is right around the corner, plus the NBA and NHL are in full swing, and BetOnline is the only place that you should be placing your bets. Anything from awards, TV shows, and reality TV, BetOnline has hundreds of props with real-time odds on almost anything you can imagine, and you can also get involved virtually through the online casino that never closes. So head to betonline.ag on the website or mobile device today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. I'll go back to the chippiness that we were talking about there. And you think about what, like Porter, I wanted to bring up what you said about how John Petty just has to overcome that. I get that you're upset. Look, anybody in the refs really just lost complete control of the game. That's what I wanted to bring up there. You're never going to hear me say that the refs are the reason why you won or you lost the game. I'll never say that because you've got opportunities in every single, whether it's an ump in a baseball game or a ref in a basketball, football game, whatever the case may be. I just will never, those words will never come out of my mouth. But I will call a spade, and I will say that I could tell, just like everybody else, at the beginning, it wasn't maybe 5 minutes in, that I'm like, there is going to be something happen at the end, whether I wasn't necessarily saying that a punch was going to be thrown. I know that I had said in our group chat that there could definitely be a fight once all that stuff was going on. Even Muss and Petty were jawing each other as Petty was going to the locker room. Of course, some fans, as you would expect, right as he was going under the tunnel there, were saying things to him. But yeah, that's just stuff that you have to overlook. Look, it's not the end of your season. Alabama is basically all but won the SEC regular season championship, and they're going to be a force in the SEC tournament. Now, I think I don't want to say that they have been exposed per se, but I think I kind of look at them in a very similar way that I look at Arkansas women's basketball. They can shoot with the best of them. You're not really sure what they can do inside, but they are a dang good team. And as long as they shoot well, then they are going to be a force to be reckoned with. But that is just stuff that you have to overcome. Nate Oates, for the most part, was able to keep his cool. He was definitely in the ref's ear, as he should have been. But you would expect that in cases like that, from the Alabama standpoint, that you wouldn't be surprised if you would have seen a type of situation like Eric Musselman against Missouri the first time around when he got ejected. But yeah, that's just stuff, especially Petty, I think he's a fifth year. I know he's a senior. I think he's a fifth year senior, but either way, he's very senior, very seasoned, and you've got to overcome stuff like that. And hopefully they learn from that moving in to closer to postseason time.
Yeah. And one last thing about the refs, and this is where I will side with the players. You're not supposed to let yourself get carried away and get technicals, but we look at that first half and how they were calling every single bump, every single ticky tack, and they were doing it both ways. You know, a ref's job is really to set the tone of the game. So if you're calling fouls like that, okay, you got to carry that on through. What they did was the opposite of really what you need to do. You can let things go a little bit in the early game, but in the second half, you need to tighten it up a little bit because this is what happens in a result of it. Stuff like players getting technicals and jawing, and where it comes to where you think punches are going to be thrown, coaches are flipping off the student section and players. You're letting a lot of things go, and there was a lot of calls that I think should have been called on Arkansas that wasn't on drives and layups.
Agreed.
But then again, you can't let yourself get, because now you just cost your team 6 points on your technical fouls. But you got to keep that mindset. This is a game where Arkansas is trying to get up in to a 5 or a 4 seed and close the gap on Alabama. Alabama is still trying to keep their lead in the SEC going into the SEC tournament. So this was a very important game, and it was big game for Arkansas as the first time since, what, 98, since they had a two ranked teams?
Yes. Yeah, top 25 matchup, first time since.
You knew the atmosphere was going to be big. So I think the refs should have done a better job. I don't care if they would have played 4-on-4 at the end of the game. You got to keep that consistency and not let the game get out of hand like what happened last night.
And speaking of, you mentioned big, and I want to talk about our bigs and the job that they've been doing. Connor Vanover has really picked it up. He didn't really do a whole lot against Alabama, mainly because of the schemes that they were playing. But Justin Smith and Jalen Williams were just phenomenal. In the second half, they combined for 22 points on 9 of 13 shooting, 15 rebounds, and were plus 45. They were plus 6 in the first half. So Justin Smith, he wasn't completely non-existent in the first half. He was getting you, so I think he had 6 rebounds and a point on a free throw. But those guys right there, and then whenever, I believe it was Justin Smith that got in foul trouble. No, it was Jalen Williams that had 2 personal fouls in the first half. Ethan Henderson has to come in. He hadn't seen the floor in like 8 or 9 games, and he gives you some quality minutes. So that right there, you've gotten plenty of quality guard play. Now, Moses Moody has been, it seems like that he's played his best games in terms of his highest points in blowouts like Alabama. I know that was one game where he had like 25 or 26. He had 24 against Bama the second time around, but most of those were on free throws. But Jalen Tate, I keep going back to him, and yes, he can be a turnover machine at times, but that guy is a headache. He reminds me of like a Patrick Beverly or a Clint McDaniel in terms of the way that he gets in people's heads. They put him on the team that you're playing's best guard every single game, and he gets in their heads. And he had like 3 blocks in the first half. I don't know if you saw that stat line. I thought it was an error. We had 8 total blocks in the first half, and 3 of them were from Jalen Tate.
Yeah, so, I remember the message where you're saying that it might have been an error, but if that was legit, that's awesome. That's a new aspect to their game is block shots.
Well, and we knew that when Justin Smith was out, that was a key piece that was very blatant. Not just we were kind of questioning when he first got hurt and we started going on that struggling spree was he really that good? Or we really that good with him? Because we weren't playing that good of talent at the time. But then he comes back and you see what a key piece he is, and you see what Connor Vanover is able to do, at least for the most part in the last 6-7 games. And then Jalen Williams has just been taking it to a whole nother level. He is from the beginning of SEC play to now, it goes without saying that he's a different player, but he is just like, it seems like quadrupled his play. If he doesn't get stats, you know that he's going to do things like set up other players for shots to get and also get rebounds. He's going to do the things, then we've talked about this too, that doesn't show up on the stat sheet. And Jacob, I'm going to go ahead and put him on the spot here. In our group chat, he had said that he'd be surprised if he's here for 2 years, if he makes it past his sophomore season. And I'll tell you what, Porter, if he continues to improve, I don't know that I can disagree with that.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you got somebody balling like that, they have a chance to get drafted and go on, especially with the way the Euro ball is and the G League's building up their reputation and basically turning it into a overseas team. You know, they're paying them right out of, you know, college and trying to give them more money. But I'll tell you what, this is who I am most impressed with. It's Devo.
Absolutely.
And on two aspects. And what I've noticed, I think, you know, what he's done defensively and he's got in there, I think he's become a leader in the locker room as a freshman. Yeah, you can go with the TikTok videos and stuff, but I think he's brought an energy to that team that they desperately needed, because when they were losing and they were in 2-4, you could just see that, like, you're walking on eggshells. You're uptight, your body's uptight, and you're not shooting as well. I think he broke that ice. And I think he's really turned that locker room into having fun, and it's played out on the court. You look and see how much fun they're having. Moses Moody hit 3 shots last night. All his points come off free throws, other than 3 field goals. And I think there was a stat that's only the third time that's happened at Arkansas. But he's hitting from the free throw line. But just what Devo has done in the locker room, on top of what he's doing on the court, I think has been the biggest key. And Connor Vanover has finally dunked the ball. He's gotten so – it's like he's got confidence, and he knows when he can go up, he can flush it. Those two kids are playing really different this year opposed to the start. And another one, like you said, Jalen, I think they're growing up before our eyes. They're men. And I think they got a taste of what the SEC's like. They drop down to 2-4 in conference play, and they're like, all right, something's got to change. And boy, has it changed.
Well, and Devo, we knew that this freshman class, they weren't top 5 in the country for nothing. But you didn't think that Devo and Jalen were going to be the ones that were making this kind of contribution. Now, of course, KK has been injured since early January, so you can't really put anything on him. But those were the two guys. And we're going to have, for the Monday show, we're going to have Monty Patel, who is a assistant coach for the Jacksonville Red Devil. Or, well, no, it's not the Red Devils anymore. I believe it's the Titans now. But he coached Devo and coached Tyree Appleby, who's now playing for Florida. So really excited to get his insight on the growth. I think he's coached Devo since like junior high. So he's been around him for quite some time. So really excited to get his input on Monday's show. But yeah, Devo, he's another one of those guys that, yeah, he can give you some stats. And I've pointed out this, we've pointed out this before too, that whether he gets the stats or not, he is just a force on the floor and just the way he leads. And he got off to 5 points within like the first 4 or 5 minutes, then got into some foul trouble. Really was never able to do much after that. But also, too, we're on the subject of guards. JD Notte gave you 16 quality minutes. He's a good shooter. We know that. Even in some bad games that he's come off the bench, he's still gotten some quality points. All points are quality, but he's gotten you some points. But in 16 minutes, he got 12 points on 4 of 9 shooting, 2 for 4 from 3. The biggest one where he missed it rimmed out, and I think I can't remember who got the rebound. I believe it was maybe Jalen or Justin that
was
got
that the one. Jalen, I think Jalen.
Jalen got the rebound, and then he got it back to JD, and he hit the 3, which was a really big one. I mean, pretty much once the Razorbacks got on that last 15-2 run, that was pretty much when it was to the point where we knew that we felt really good about it. You never feel good in a game of this magnitude whenever the Razorbacks have a lead, just based on sports history. Our sports history, at least. But you felt pretty solid after that 15-2 run, and they were able to keep it. I mean, this team just has so much grit and so much fight. This is one of the grittiest teams I've seen in quite some time from a basketball team. I mean, I think you saw some of those Mike Anderson teams that would really fight, especially 2014, 2000, or I think it was maybe, yeah, 14 and 15. And then 16 and 17 were some really good ones, too. The 17 team that should have advanced to the Sweet 16, but that's another story for another day. But overall, you know, you've got to like this team is playing, I don't want to say as well as anybody in the country, but there's not many teams that you want to, that want to see them. I don't think anybody wants to see them right now.
No, and definitely what they're doing on defense. I've noticed a couple of the games when they bring it across half court, they'll bring somebody up to guard it, and then they bring somebody else up to trap them. It's a weird kind of trap. You're not trying to trap them in the corner. And I think it throws a lot of these teams off, and they might get some threes. But another point that I made, you know, last night in our group chat, and I put it on our Discord, is I think why they're giving up so many threes is they're not really that quick on the dribble drive defense. Yes, they're good down low. They're good at guarding on the perimeter. but they're nearly not that quick in guarding the drive. So I think they're loosening up so they can not give away the easy layups. Cause I've noticed when they tighten up on them guards just blow right by them. And they get easy layups. So I think that's big part of why they're giving the threes, because you have to close out at a faster pace and you got to go longer. And I've noticed that the teams that are shooting the threes, they pick up on this. They're shooting their threes about 2-3 steps behind the 3-point line. So they're not shooting right on the 3-point line. So they scoot back a little bit and they're teeing off because they know that they're going to get a little of that cushion. It's almost like you're playing a zone in football. And you just dump it in the zones. I think that's what's happening. And I think it's a risk that Musselman's willing to take. And you can't argue when you win 8 in a row.
Yeah, and I know that I've been hard, especially like last night, or I guess it's dropping, it'll be Friday, but so Wednesday night, I kept saying, all right, once we got into halftime, about how we've got to start protecting the three, because I know that a lot of times it's been their game plan to just let them shoot the three and take those chances. And just because they got hot, I kind of became a prisoner of the moment and said that they really need to get on that. And I think that, if I'm not mistaken, I was saying all that, and Bruner, I don't think hit a three in the second half. He heated up right there at the end of the first half, and I don't believe that he hit a three the entire second. If it was, it was maybe like one. It wasn't very much, but you know, Alabama didn't even hit a three until, I believe they took 9 shots, and they didn't even hit their first one until like 11 minutes into the game. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a good game plan. I mean, Coach, like, We always go back, as Zach made so many good points when he was on the show about the basketball team a couple of weeks ago. This was when they were, I think this is right after they got blown out by Alabama, that we had him on. And he was just talking about, look, you know, Musselman didn't get dumb overnight. And he's done well developing these. Now, Vance Jackson is one in particular that you've been a little disappointed in, but overall, he's done a really good job this particular. Last year, you had Jimmy Witt, that was his grad transfer that really developed and fit into the system. This year, it seems like all three of them have. Especially, you know, when you talk about the ones that came in from last year, I'm not talking about some of the ones that sat out, but that sat out last season. But right now, the basketball team currently sits at second in the SEC. It's looking like the winner of the LSU-Arkansas game is probably going to get that second seed. Nothing is guaranteed right now, but it is pretty much guaranteed that the Razorbacks are going to get a top 4 seed and a double bye in the SEC tournament. So they're sitting in a very, very good spot right now. I'll tell you teams that I wouldn't care to see is Ole Miss. I know they're playing really well right now. That's like the main one. And Kentucky, they're starting to get – I wouldn't say that they're – going to be the Kentucky of old that really gets to that point where they make it to an Elite Eight or anything, but they're getting there to where it seems like they are winning some games and they could be a dangerous team. And so Razorbacks again will play LSU, and then they finish up on Tuesday against South Carolina. That's going to be like a 5:30 game. So sometime
A&M game too.
That's right. That's right. Oh yeah. I actually had, you know what? I got that. That got lost in my notes here. So for you guys that have not heard, you probably have by now. That was at the bottom of my notes here. I'm glad you brought that up. The A&M game, so at least one of them, it's looking like we're just going to make up one of them, has been rescheduled to March 6th. As we are recording, as this will be released, they have not released a day and a time. They have not released a broadcast, so we're not sure what channel it's going to be on or what time it will be. If you have a ticket from the February 6th game, that will be honored. So if you're thinking about going and you had a ticket from February 6th, then you will be able to use that. I'm not sure how many of you noticed that if you happen to read the article, but you're good to go if you already have that. So, and then real quick on the women's front, I know that right around the time that we're recording is when they're going to tip off against Auburn, but they have senior day against Alabama. That'll be at 5 p.m. on SEC Network Sunday to honor Coach Neighbors' first senior class, one that he has talked so highly of building the foundation of where the basketball team is now. So looking forward to – Porter, are you going to go to that one in Fayetteville?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
You are? Okay,
definitely.
So you'll be there.
Look, man, to get a chance to see Chelsea Judge walk off the court one last time, I mean
– you can't miss that.
You have to. I mean, that's the thing. And all of them, not just Chelsea,
sure,
but – you know, you got Taylor and Macy,
Grace,
all the seniors, Gracie, you know, all these seniors that really started, you know, Jalen, everybody, this is what started what we're at now. So you got to tip your hat to all of them. I mean, every single one of them. And that government, I mean, following this team for the past 2 years and really deep diving and covering them, I mean, this, I'm proud of them. I'm proud of them because of the fact that we're actually going to get to see their name called in the NCAA selection. They're actually going to get to go to the tournament. So for them to get to experience that, I couldn't be more proud of them and Coach Neighbors and what they've done. You know, wins over Baylor and UConn, those were really cool, but I hate to say it, but it's like, it's going to be really sweet knowing that when they get their name called, because they have deserved that. Yeah, they deserve the win over UConn. That was a program-changing win, but I think it's going to mean more to them to really sit there on Selection Sunday or Selection Monday when they do it and hear their name called and see who they're going to play against first round.
Yeah, it's going to be extra special just because of the things that they already have been through. And, man, just to know, to think about where they could have been last year. You know, you hate to not see Lex Tolfrey get a chance at that with how great she was playing. But yeah, they're finally going to get that shot this year. We'll switch over to baseball real quick, man. You know, we're recording about an hour after the Razorbacks walked it off. That was just absolutely insane of Jalen Battles with bases loaded. He singles, and it was Opitz that scored the winning run against. Now, you're playing a good Southeast Missouri State team. I scouted them a little bit this week, and we'll talk more about it on Sunday's show because by that time we will have played the final, like it's a four-game series, so we'll have played the final game by that point. I hated the way that last week worked because Cabo and I, just the way that things were scheduled, we did our baseball segment in like the eighth inning of TCU. So a couple of things, for the most part, the content was fresh, but it was funny. Porter, I didn't even tell you about this. So like right as we're recording, I've got the game, you know, on another screen right next to me, and I'm talking, and my question to him was, you know, where is Christian Franklin? And I'm not joking. The second I asked that question, he hits a triple to tie the game. So I'm like, okay, well now we got to pause the recording and we got to figure out something else. So that was, yeah, it just sucked that was so late, you know, and kind of conflicted with our schedules, but a fantastic weekend.
Well, you're coming into baseball season. I mean, some of these games could last 4 or 5 hours.
I mean, we've seen them go into 3 in the morning. So yeah, it's just, it's crazy how that works, but nonetheless, a great weekend. I mean, you can't really shoot great, phenomenal, whatever you want to call it, for the Razorbacks in Arlington going 3-0 against 3 top 10 teams. And I told you guys, now when we saw this against, again, now, you know, we're between game one and game two of this Southeast Missouri State series. And I told you guys that, you know, it's going to be, they really set the bar high and there's probably going to be some letdowns. I don't necessarily think that we're going to sweep this four game series without Southeast Missouri State. They are a very quality team. As we saw today, they got off to a 3-0. Caleb Bolden was brilliant this past weekend, just really didn't have his stuff. Had 21 pitches in the first, or 27 pitches in the first inning before he got pulled out and Patrick Wicklander came in relief. But man, this team, it's absolutely insane. Porter, so I was pulling up the stat right before we started recording. I pulled up the stat, 23 out of their 27 runs so far. Now, again, this is before they play their Friday game. That is after the sixth inning. 23 out of 27 runs are after the sixth inning. So they're already the rally hogs, already the comeback hogs. Just can't say enough about that. You look at guys like Cullen Smith, who's been batting out of the three hole mostly. He's 4-13 with 3 RBIs. Brady Slavens, who's been the guy that he's been in the five hole. Mostly, he stepped up for Matt Goodhart, who's been out with stomach and seizure issues. 6-17, 5 runs, 5 RBIs, 2 home runs, including the 3-run homer against Texas that essentially won the game when it was already tied up. You know, you got Opitz in the 6 hole, Battles in the 9 hole, 7-18, 4 runs, 5 RBIs. And then you've got a pitching staff. Yes, we've had our struggles with some of them, but overall, you just can't be happy enough with what you've seen. And you got to point out specifically, and I know that Cabo is really happy about this one, Jackson Wiggins. He's known him for a long time. And that kid, man, already throwing, he's touching 98. Cabo had said, I think he was supposed to be on tonight, but he had some stuff that he had to attend to. But I was talking to Cabo the other day, I guess the day after the TCU game, and he was talking to Jackson right afterwards. Jackson called him, and he said, you know, I really think I could have hit 100, 101 with how juiced I was feeling. And I say juiced figuratively, not literally. You got to be careful using the word juiced in baseball.
Oh, baseball.
You got to be careful with that. But, yeah, figuratively. But, man, that kid has faced, I think it's 6 batters, and he has struck them all, or at least struck 5 of them out. I can't remember if he struck the last one, but I know that the first 5 he faced were all strikeouts. And I think that it was maybe the sixth one as well. Maybe hit a ground ball to get the out there. But either way, you really can't think of, I don't know if you saw that one from FAU, that kid that was that hit two grand slams.
That was really cool.
That's about as good as you could start off. Yeah. So that's like back-to-back grand slams. That's as good as you could start from the plate. Jackson Wiggins started as good from the mound, and he got his first win. So,
what was our biggest question coming into the season? Was the pitching.
Sure.
And how they come out and dominated that. You know, and that's what impressed me. I mean, they scored, 13 runs, and and that rolled over today. You had Bolden had a horrible start. Dave Van Horn went in really immediately and yanked him out because he knew he had somebody who could come in behind him. Last year, the year before, you didn't really have that option because you only had about three guys you could rely on really to come in early innings, especially in a four-game series where you're wanting to spare some of your pitchers and save some arms for that Saturday-Sunday game. That's what impresses me because that shows you how deep this pitching staff really is. And for them to come in, and also with that series last weekend, baseball is one of the most analytical sports there is. And all these teams are coming in fresh. You really don't have the film and their tendencies. Like I said, analytics. So you got to go off their tendencies. What's this person going to do a 2-1 count? What's he going to do on a 1-2 count? What's he going to do on a full count? All these things that they put into tape and what they study coming into a series as big as – because if this would have been in, Omaha, they would have had so much to study on all these pitchers. So you're going talent versus talent in a series like this, and we've seen how much talent Arkansas has got.
Yeah, and Southeast Missouri State, they pitched their top pitcher, I think it was Dylan Dodd was his name. He was in week one, the Ohio Valley Conference Pitcher of the Week. So already started off hot, did really well, gave you some quality innings against the Razorbacks. And then Austin Williams, who is a Judsonia, Arkansas native. Judsonia is a town right outside of Searcy. He gave some quality innings as well and was doing great until the Razorbacks decided to turn it on in the ninth. And so, hats off to just in one game. We've seen a good Southeast Missouri squad, and I think that the rest of these three games this weekend is going to be awesome as well. And so it's some good, quality matchups in terms of you got to kind of come back down to earth because you go to Arlington and you play the way that you did, you beat the caliber of teams that you did, and then you're going to have these mid-major teams that are really going to want to come into your place and say, hey, we've got talent too. They're the number two team in the country, and we want to win. We want to beat them. And so I think that as so long as if you sweep this series, yeah, you stay at the number two ranking. If you lose a game, you maybe drop to number three or something. So it's not the end of the world. So people don't need to lose their minds, if we lose a game just because it's a mid-major. I know that it's just second nature because that's going to happen. I know they had some rough games last year, particularly I know the Eastern Illinois, that series comes to mind right off the top of my head. But, don't let
They get routed by Little Rock and then make the World Series?
They got beat like 17-6 or something by Little Rock. So
baseball. Go off. That's one of them sports that, and especially with all these players getting an extra year. I mean, when the MLB draft going to that fifth round instead of that deep round, everybody's coming back and they get an extra year. We knew this was going to happen. We knew some of these teams, and there's some D1 JUCO teams that could probably hang with some Division I college teams. I mean, it's just how deep, when you go to baseball and there's so many prospects. I know a team in Oklahoma, Connor State, where, they're really good every year and they could hang with, I'm not saying they could beat Arkansas, but they could hang with somebody in a four-game series.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll once this series is over by Sunday, I think we play. I don't know what time we play. I want to say it's the afternoon, like it was on Thursday and like it is for most of this weekend that we play. So by the time that we record the pod on next Sunday, we should be able to cover this in full. Cabo will be with us for Monday's show so he can give more of an insight. He can give you more of an analytical standpoint. I know baseball, but not to the point that he does. That guy is just out of this world. Yeah, he's out of this world, but again, he does coach it. So we do have a quick so we're going to do the questions real quick before we get over to Tara Talmadge and Porter's interview. So go ahead and cue the music. Now, it's more of a Discord question. The only one that we have tonight, we actually got two from Kelly Marie. You can always count on her. And so she asks, is every game of this series going to be like this one, talking about the Razorbacks having to keep coming back in these baseball games, at least in the four that they've played so far? I wouldn't be shocked to see it at the beginning. You know, you're still trying to get your feet wet and you're still trying to figure out your season. And so I would definitely wouldn't be shocked if we see a couple more games like this. And you got to think about, too, like I mentioned, Southeast Missouri State's a mid-major coming into Fayetteville. They want to prove that they can hang with these guys. And so a lot of these baseball teams, especially with the shortened draft, you got to expect stuff like this. There's more talent, not just on the Vanderbilts and the Arkansas and the Floridas. It's all across college baseball. So I definitely think that we could definitely have to see more games. You don't like to see these games where they have to come back, but it definitely makes it pretty crazy good whenever it does happen.
Yeah, and you're not going to see some of these 33-0 Auburn wins like they had this today or yesterday. You know, you're going to see some good baseball, and that's what people want. They want good baseball. But yeah, and you got to think, this is Arkansas. It could be 70. Look at last week compared to this week in the weather. I mean, you're going to get that. You're going to get a March cold front. You're going to get possibly snow in April. You never know what the weather's going to be like and how this goes. Team comes in hot. With that number two ranking comes that number two target. We've seen what happened when they were ranked number one overall or number two overall in the preseason last year, I believe, and how they just didn't perform in pitching. So you don't know what you're going to get in any given weekend. So yeah, it could turn into some games, but you want games like this because guess what? Come Omaha, come your super regionals, you're going to need these close series, these grind out wins like they did today, because when you get that time and you get in a close game, you're going to be used to it.
And this one might be one for you. All I know is that they are, this next one, that they're 15-6 and they're sixth in the SEC. But how about the girls game Sunday? Is Bama any good? I mean, they're definitely a respectable team.
They're 15-6. I mean, they're getting blown out by A&M right now, but they're good. But look, watching this team all year and how they go have played on the road, flying in the same day, coming off hot, it's senior night. Chelsea Dungy's in her bag. You know, Destiny Slocum, it's going to be an emotional. They might come off to a slow start, but man, this team's on fire. Well, I don't see them losing their last game in Bud Walton Arena.
I was going to say, I don't see that happening either, but I just checked the score. A&M won 73-67. Bama scored 23 in the fourth quarter. Yeah,
they were down 22 when we started recording.
So A&M scored 11 in the fourth quarter. Alabama scored 23. So, yeah, I think that Arkansas is going to win it, but definitely will be in for a fight, no question. So, well, that's it for the Discord questions. Porter, I know I forgot to mention the softball team. We got to get some shout. So many Razorback programs, as we mentioned on Monday's show, have just been great lately. Great as
every spring sport that's in season right now is ranked in the top 25. Every single one of them. I mean, in the swim dive, they finished eighth in the SEC. That's a program best for them, and they are ranked 20th in the nation. So, but yeah, the softball team, they started off, I mean, they're 5-1. They got a pitcher who really stepped up. This was another sport that their season was cut short. I was actually there at the last game, and, you know, so for them to come in, Mary Half has just been unbelievable. She pitched 19.2 innings, 149 pitches in 24 hours and went 3-0.
Wow.
I mean, and also another thing, they've hit 19 home runs in 7 games already as a team. They've got two that's hit 4.
And they played some good competition. It's not like they're playing, you know, the Sisters of the Blind, or nothing against the Sisters of the Blind. I'm just saying.
But this team is really impressed, and I had a chance to jump on the press conference with Coach Dyfel, and I honestly believe that, you know, this is one of the deepest teams that they've had, you know, or most balanced, because their defense is really good, their pitching, because when you got Autumn Storms and Mary Half, you know, pitching really good, and they got their 9-hole hitter hit 3 home runs over the weekend. So, I mean, when you get your 9-hole hitter and hitting 3 home runs and they're hitting grand slams and bombs, this is going to be a really exciting team. So I really want to give them a shout out, Coach Dyfel. You've got Kobe Hill and the soccer team. They're starting their season off. They played Missouri State. The score slipped my hand, but there's a lot of exciting things going on in Arkansas. And we need the success of the men's sports, the basketball and the football, to get more people in the stands of these other sports.
I'm telling you, we're just, I don't know what we're going to do the next time we actually lose a game. We're just so used to winning over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But all right. Well, we're up against the break. Next segment, Porter talks with Pig Trail Nation anchor and also contributor from the SEC Network, Tara Talmadge. Stick around. You're listening to the Hog Talk podcast. Whether rare dead stock or the latest release, find the exact shoe you're looking for through our friends at eBay. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go for the pair you have been eyeing. eBay's authenticity guarantees your sneakers are meticulously inspected by independent professional authenticators that verify the box, logo, stitching, and dozens of other inspection points. The guarantee also protects sellers with a verified return process. Selling fees have even been eliminated on sneakers $100 or more, making it free to sell or flip your collection. Go to ebay.com/sneakers today. eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection. With American National, you get a dedicated agent who will help you make well-informed decisions about protecting your lifestyle. Call us today for a free review of your commercial, home, and auto policies, or to learn more about our customizable farm and ranch insurance. Let the Atkins Agency be your agency of choice. You can visit us on the web at theatkinsagency.com. Call us at 501-428-0877 or connect with us through Facebook. Go Hogs!
Located in Fayetteville, Rapology is your top spot for banners, signs, and wraps. From commercial fleet wraps, color changes, vinyl decals, and much more, they take care of you in a timely and professional manner. Call Rapology today at 479-368-6490. Again, that's 479-368-6490. The Hog Talk podcast is brought to you by Heinemann Services. Heinemann Services is a family-owned and operated business whose work ethic and customer service will restore your confidence in handymen. They offer interior and exterior projects for your home or business, including repairs, installations, small remodels, landscaping, decks, fencing, and much more. Call Corey and his crew today at 479-347-9336. That's 479-347-9336.
All right. Welcome back to episode 170 of the Hog Talk podcast, where we go to the Workman's Travel Center hotline and bring in one of the anchors of the Pig Trail Nation, Tara Talmadge. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good. I mean, we're in a time right now where we've stated on the podcast that it's one of the most exciting times to be a Razorback fan. So kind of talk about how much fun it is for you to be able to anchor and be on the sidelines.
It's been so much fun. It's definitely a different year, of course, not really being able to interact with a lot of the players or athletes, but it's so much fun to see them succeed right now. You have the men's basketball team doing well. You had football make a huge turnaround. Baseball, of course, doing great. Women's sports also doing great as well. So hopefully that continues throughout the rest of this year.
So kind of talk about your journey, you know, where you started. If people's not familiar with your start, I think everybody's pretty familiar with you being for Pig Trail Nation, but
yeah,
just kind of talk about how it started and where you're at now.
Well, so when I graduated, I had a really hard time finding a job and actually ended up taking a role as a web producer for a new station out in West Texas. I worked in Midland, Odessa, and eventually told them, you know, I want to do sports. That's what my goal is. And then when the sports guy left, I got promoted and took over that role and was there for a little over a year. And then the job at Pig Trail Nation became available and, you know, called some people up, tried to work my way into that. And thankfully it worked out. It's been great to get the opportunity to come to Fayetteville, Arkansas. And I'd never been to Arkansas before. So I came in kind of blind, and it's been so great to be here.
Yeah. And we've talked, you know, with Nikki and Alyssa and just the people who've come in from other states to come to Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was it like to get used to the fan base, as passionate as it is, good or bad? You know, how long did it take you to get adapted to such a passionate fan base?
I want to say I adapted pretty quick, but that's probably not true. Honestly, it was surprising to me. I mean, it makes sense though, when you think about the fact that the Razorbacks are the pride of the state. There's no, you know, professional teams. There's other colleges, obviously, but Arkansas is on the biggest platform. And so to me, it's, there's not anything else like it in terms of a fan base. The support that the Razorbacks have from everyone here is incredible. And yeah, it definitely took some getting used to. It's like the moment I think I announced that I was moving to Arkansas, my social media went crazy with everyone being so nice and welcoming me to Fayetteville. And I was like, this is going to be great. This is something that I'm excited about.
So you've had a pretty crazy year. Alyssa Orange took the new director role, then COVID hit, and then you got to find yourself on the sidelines with the SEC network. So how cool was that to really be able to work with ESPN and in the SEC network?
It's been great. It kind of came out of nowhere in terms of, you know, I'd sent them a lot of emails, plenty. I probably bugged them too much, but it worked out. So it was great to be able to actually get that access, because it's something that, especially now with COVID, we don't get at all. And so being able to get on the field and see how the team interacts with each other and those big moments that they had this year, it was so exciting. And being able to talk with Sam Pittman after the games and you get his first reaction to being in the stadium and winning some of those games, it was really cool to be a part of.
Yeah. And it's kind of sad that, you know, with the restrictions, you know, with everything going on in sports and the lack of fans, but we were at the UConn game together, and just the atmosphere with the 4,400. And I think every one of us had our phones out for the last moments. And me growing up, my dad was stationed in Connecticut. So I've followed UConn women's basketball since the mid 90s. So of course I was starstruck seeing Gino and all the players in the UConn. And so it was a bittersweet moment for me because of course, you know, I follow UConn, but yet I cover the women's basketball team. So it was just an amazing moment. And all the fans there, Coach Neighbors said it gave them 10 to 15 extra points.
You could tell, honestly, from the moment Arkansas took the court, that game, like they wanted that win. And I think the fans kind of fed off of that, even though it's not a full stadium, you're not allowed to have that many people in there. It was so cool to be a part of. I mean, you said, you know, we all had our phones out ready to go at the end of the game. And that was just such a cool moment. Like, it honestly reminded me a little bit. That was, by the way, the first game I had been at in Bud Walton Arena this year. Men, women, doesn't matter. That was the first one. And I was like, this is so cool. it reminded me a little bit of like the Kentucky game for the men last year. And like the energy that you felt in Bud Walton.
Yeah, and it was really cool because, you know, you expect a game like UConn and it was going to be like, well, I'm just glad we get to experience to see UConn play. And the expectations wasn't that high, but as the game went on and Chelsea just started to go off, you're like, they have a really good chance of winning this game. And so you get really excited and you're trying to be media and sit there and be good and be nice, but it was one of them moments like, just whatever.
It's so hard sometimes to be really impartial. And I know that that's fully our job. But when you get to know these players and these athletes, you can't help but just want to pull for them sometimes, especially in big games like that.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the coaching staff as a whole, you know, all over Arkansas with Pittman and Neighbors and Musselman. I mean, all the way up to the top. And I just got done looking at the video Hunter Yurchek posted about the men's game tonight. If that don't get you wanting to run through a brick wall for this program, right? I don't know what will.
I love how creative everyone on that campus is in terms of athletics. Like Eric Musselman is clearly leading the way with that, but you've also got Hunter Yurchek, like your athletic director, is getting involved in some social media stuff, and he's about to go hand out hamburgers tonight to people that are waiting in line. So it's just like, I love how interactive they are with the fans. It's definitely it's becoming a big part of the business for sure, but it's so fun to see, and they're having a good time doing it, I think.
So with you dealing with recruits and stuff, have you noticed a difference in the attitude that the recruits see this stuff on social media, and their willingness to even give Arkansas a listen, much less come to Arkansas and play.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Like it opens them up a little bit, because those recruits, I mean, they're growing up in that generation where they're all online, and a lot of, I mean, you see it in their announcement videos. They have giant, like, full production videos when they announce where they're going to be committing. So social media fully plays a role in what they decide and who they talk to, I'm sure.
Yeah, and another thing I get is, like, you have the new age stuff with the production and the social media, but almost it's an old school feeling of family and togetherness. And when you have it, you know, and I've seen Hunter Yurecek, it doesn't matter if it's the polo team or whatever team's playing. Mm-hmm. He's always tweeting out, congratulating them. And I feel like it's sincere. It's not just because he's trying to do his due diligence. I really feel his sincerity. And also, like, when we were watching the Texas A&M game and how he was down there shaking, like he was a fan on that last call, you know. So it's really nice to see him from the top. And I think it trickles down to all the other coaches, because I feel like if they're not that tech savvy or that passionate, it's like they need to start getting very passionate about this program.
Hunter Yurecek is so passionate, and it's one of the best parts about him, in my opinion. Like, I remember the Mississippi State football game, and he's on the sideline. And if you look back at some of the video from when the last, you know, snap took, he just starts losing it. Like, he's so excited, and it's awesome. It's so cool to see your athletics director do that. But like you said, he does that for everyone. He's excited when everyone is succeeding on that campus. Obviously, you know, he's made a couple of hires, and I think one of the biggest parts of the success for those hires is that he's picked people who want to be at Arkansas. They want the job, not just because it's an SEC job, not because it's a D1, but because it's Arkansas. And I think that's a big part of why some of these coaches have done so well.
And I think a lot of it too is, I was talking to coach about Barry Odom and coach Pittman and the lack of the micromanaging. It's like the coaches, the head coaches, the AD, they let their coaches do their job. And I think that just, it's less tension. I mean, then the state of the football program, you could very easily be walking on eggshells of, I've got to win 5-6 games. But it's funny that you hire these staffs and you get this continuity together, but it's like a free range. As long as you're doing your job, he's going to respect you and let you be able to do whatever you want to do to make this program better.
Which has got to be very hard, honestly. You think about it, like, that's got to be so stressful. But at the same time, if you're going to hire someone, you need to trust them and their ability. And I mean, that's why you picked them, is because they're good at what they do. So you need to let them do it. And like I said, it's got to be hard, but he's got good people in place. And I think that's a big part of it. It's their people. Like, Sam Pittman's a good person. You know, he's not going to hire people who aren't good people, people who don't work with the staff, people who don't mesh together well. He's building a good group of men to work together and make that team better.
Yeah, and we'll switch over to the women's side of things. You know, we're talking about building programs and what Coach Neighbors has done with the basketball team, what Coach Dyfel's done with the softball team, Jordan Weber's done with the gymnastics. I mean, there's so much that we could – this could be an hour-long show just because talking about the success. And like I was talking about all the women's teams that are ranked, it gets me very excited when, you know, Kennedy Hamrick breaks the school record. You know, they're lacking of fans, but yet they're still showing out in a sport like gymnastics where you're, it's a performance. You really need to feed off that fan interaction. So for them, what they're doing with the lack of fans has got to be phenomenal.
I've got to say, the gymnastics stuff is one of my favorite things to watch in general. Like, I just don't understand how they do what they do. It's so entertaining to watch. And so when you see, I mean, Kennedy Hamrick, I think the score that she got for the all-around, it's the all-time leading program record, but it's also the second leading score for an all-around in the country right now, which is just crazy. So, and I know that people were concerned when Jordan, we were excited that Jordan Weaver got it hired, but because of her age, I think people were a bit skeptical, and clearly it's been working out. Another good hire from Hunter Yurecek.
Well, how do you turn down somebody who's in that sport? You won an Olympic gold medal. And
yeah.
And one of the programs, when you think of, other than the Dream Team in basketball and mm-hmm. now the women's soccer team, I mean, you got to put the gymnastics team up there. So it's not like it was a low level sport. This is one of the most storied programs. I go mm-hmm. back to Carrie Strug. I don't remember if you remember that vault or not, but when Carrie Strug ran down and done the vault on a broken ankle, got a 10 and won the team the gold, to me, that was one of the most amazing Olympic moments ever. And just mm-hmm. the gymnastics team and of course, overcoming everything that's happened in the gymnastics community with the female athletes. It's awesome.
It has been awesome to see. And, you know, you think about what they've been through in terms of a coaching change and the whole COVID situation and the season being cut short. And it's impressive what they've been able to do, especially I think it's the second season with Jordan Weaver. It's fun to watch them. They clearly enjoy what they're doing.
And with Coach Neighbors, we'll go to the basketball, you know, and now, you know, we failed to mention that we're possibly getting to witness one of the greatest women's basketball players to ever step foot on campus. And, you know, Sunday, that's the last home game. You know, it's probably the last time we will get to see her in Bud Walton Arena. So what is that moment going to be like? And just how proud are you of the team that has become with Arkansas women's basketball?
It's going to be so sad, honestly, but like I'm so, as a fan in general, like it's been awesome to watch Chelsea Dungy do what she has done. I mean, she's been dropping 30 plus points. Like it's just nobody's business. And then you've got Destiny Slocum who's come in and helped this team immensely. And honestly, when you think about, you know, kind of what Mike Neighbors has built, Chelsea Dungy is one of those who came in blind and believed in his plan and helped him build this program into probably, I mean, for them to not make the NCAA tournament would just be ridiculous. So, I mean, we don't know it for sure yet, but this is a team he's made them into a top 20 team, and she's a huge part of it. If anyone was going to get a statue on campus, I'm sure it would be Chelsea Dungy.
Yeah. And I know with South Carolina doing the one for Asia Wilson, I'm sure that sparked some kind of, you know, talk, but yeah, she is definitely, I mean, you're talking about a pillar of that program, and that you look mm-hmm. at the future, your top freshman, Alana Eaton, goes out with an injury. And then next year you've got Jersey coming in along with the other three were McDonald's All-American nominees. Yep. So it's only going to get better from here, but it is going to be hard to replace somebody like Chelsea. Yeah. I mean, we can't, you know, say that they'll just plug and play on her because of what she has meant to this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't replace Chelsea Dungy and what she's done. And honestly, when you talk to Mike Neighbors about it, he even gets a little like emotional talking about Chelsea just because she's been such a big part of that program. And so yes, you do get Jersey Wolfenberger in here and McDonald's All-American. That's incredible. I'm sure that she'll immediately be able to make an impact for the Razorbacks, but you know, you're also going to lose Destiny Slocum. You're probably going to lose Amber Ramirez. Like it's just, there's a lot of talent that you've got on that team that you're going to have to turn around and say, who's going to fill those roles?
Yeah. And then you got the softball team with Coach Dyfel. You know, they had, and what I look at is the hunger that these kids have this year when they had something taken away from them. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the basketball team was right there. They were getting ready for a watch party. I was going to go to the watch party and get ready to see where they're going to go play. And then the emails start flooding, you know, the softball team and just having everybody be able to come back. And I was talking to Coach Dyfel and how impressed I was with Mary Half and for having that long of a layoff and just come in and throw 19 innings and have an ERA of 1.09. I mean, it was just very impressive. And the home runs they've been hitting. How impressed are you with the start of the softball team?
I mean, so far it's hard to be upset with any of it. I mean, they've done a really good job. And you talk about Mary Half. story. I basically did this segment a while back that was called Territorize It, if anyone ever saw it. My first segment was with Mary Half and Autumn Storms, and they were trying to teach me how to pitch. I'm not going to tell you the long story, but it did not go well. So what they do is so impressive. And to do it, like you mentioned, 19 innings, I mean, that's exhausting. And it, to do it so well is really impressive to see.
Yeah, because what people don't really realize right offhand is, you know, a baseball pitcher, they pitch one game and then they got 3-4 days rest. You know, yeah. Mary Half, she come in and pitched on in that 14 inning marathon. And then if another mm-hmm. pitcher gets in a jam, they brought her right back in for another seven. Yep. So it's awesome. And I was at we were playing at a softball tournament, Lake Fayetteville, and the Ladybacks were there helping out and stuff. And the firemen were there. Mm-hmm. They had a team and they tried to hit off the pitcher. And you know, the big guys are up there just swinging the bat. And these girls yeah. were just smoking it by this guy. And he had two strikes on him. And this girl threw a changeup. And the bat hit the back of him. He looked back to the plate, and the ball was just crossing the plate. I mean, so watching that, I mean, and when I'm at the press box, it looks fast. But when you're down mm-hmm. on the floor and you see how fast that ball is really coming in, it's, I know why some of them girls, they have like two, you know, 180 batting averages, because it just seems like it would be very yeah. hard to bat, much less even pitch.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't imagine trying to hit that. That's not something that I actually did. So I'm going to leave that to them.
So we'll end it with this. Just talk about, you know, where people can find you, what you got going yeah. on, and just, you know, talk about, you know, what I want to know is also is, like, as a woman in sports and mm-hmm. being an anchor, how awesome is it that Arkansas is finally starting to get that recognition and more teams are starting to get that publicity?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I'll go with the Arkansas part. I mean, it's been great to see Arkansas come up like it has over the past several years. I've been here for over three now. And, you know, I was here for the last Brett Bielema year. And then everything kind of went a little south. And then, you know, we're going to talk about now. And just in general, I mean, I think every sport on campus is doing exceptionally well. It's hard to argue with what's going on that campus. And so it's fun to talk about teams that are winning. I'll say that. And it definitely helps. And as a woman, I mean, I've gotten so much support from everyone, honestly, in Arkansas. I can't say that I've ever had anyone, you know, come at me for anything because I'm a female talking about sports. So that's been really great. And then if you want to talk with me at all, I mean, I'm pretty much always on Twitter. If you need anything, tweet me. I pretty much always try to respond to everyone. So it's just at Tara Talmadge, and that's it.
Yeah. And also one more thing I wanted to add, yeah. I forgot about what, talk about, you know, not really filling the shoes, but what was it like following someone like Alyssa, who's been here for so long? And just talk about her and what she's done for you and moving up through the ranks.
Oh, Alyssa's been great, especially when I first got here. I obviously had experience, but not even remotely close to what I was about to get myself into. And so she really helped me become pretty much where I'm at today. And obviously she was promoted and I was promoted to her former position. And so she helped me a lot during that process in terms of what I was about to start doing on a daily basis and what that role really meant. And she's helped me a lot.
Well, Tara, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for taking time out of your day to be on the podcast, and look forward to seeing you in the future.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that will do it for this special episode of 170 of the Hog Talk Podcast. Special thanks to Tara for being on, and Woo Pig.